Right. So, let's go to knots.
Spell that.
S-C-O-T-O, Scoto. And then knots as in astronauts, N-A-U-T.
Scoto.
Scoto, darkness. So, on the second night of our Project Luma, I love being Scotonauts working on Project Luma. It just seems like the perfect resolution of duality. So we're here, we're keeping each other company. And here, apart from the daily do, although we have our own daily do here, don't we? And taking this chance to, if we take it, to slow way down. And I know that you are doing this and enjoying the unrolling of each moment in a way that I know lets our beings become plastic again, lets us become new in some way, which seems quite miraculous, actually. It's work to get here, but when we're here, we're doing this very simple thing, and yet, so tonight, last night we spent time with that opening of our koan. The storehouse of treasures opens of itself. The seamless creativity of being. And this morning I took a walk, walked out the door, and all the trees were absolutely full of starlings. I don't know what that, is there a name, Linda, for that huge, there is, isn't there?
There's a name for every bird, but
I think it's a murmuration.
A murmuration. There was definitely a murmuration of starlings going on. Yeah, I knew there was some particular name. And they were having quite a conversation in all of the treetops. And the acequias were running. The ditches, the irrigation ditches are flowing. So there's this murmuration of starlings above, and there's this murmuration of acequias below. Everything all a rustle. And in my mother tree, the leaves were just reaching up and beyond the blue. And as I came back into this space, there is this big, funny creaking of the door lock and the creaking of the door and the rattle of the toilet paper roll and the sounds of footsteps. Just unfolding, yeah, just appearing. How can that be? How could this be? Just appearing like this. And it doesn't mean, it didn't mean, and doesn't mean anything is excluded, of course. Not excluding that my dear friend is weakening day by day, not excluding the sadness in the lives of ones we love, not excluding refugees and bombs, nothing excluded. But to let the world love me like this anymore seems essential. Why would I refuse it? It opens of itself. So awakening, the cosmos unfolding in my dreaming heart-mind, and my heart-mind unfolding in the dreaming cosmos. The cosmos looking at the cosmos through the eyes of the cosmos. And on, propelled by an inconceivable creative energy that we could call hunger or love or chi. And the rhythms it generates, the rhythms being conceived, being born, flourishing, decay, death, excited, sad, bored, contented, furious. All of the rhythms of this generosity. But. So often I feel separate, excluded, and excluding. And this can be very subtle. I caught myself with one of them just recently. You heard me maybe ad nauseum talking about being there by the cove and all the beings of the cove. Sentient and non-sentient. I didn't talk about the cormorants. There are a lot of cormorants. And they sit out there and they take off and land in their gangly way and they stick their necks up and they dive and they sit out on the rocks with their wings out looking like sort of bird scarecrows. And I don't like them very much. And I suddenly realized I was like excluding the cormorants. And I didn't even realize it. And it's like that, isn't it? The things that we sort of like, oh yeah, and then there's the cormorants, you know. The things that we, without even thinking about it, shut out. Yeah. So I want to move to the second part of our koan. The storehouse of treasures opens of itself. You may take them and use them. You may take them and use them. That may is an interesting word, isn't it? Anybody remember playing Mother May I? And my mother was very insistent on the difference between can and may. She was a speech therapist and a Canadian, and she was particular about her words. And so you may use them. You may take them and use them. Huh. So I think we'll see that this interestingly corresponds with our second of our three treasures, the Dharma. Yeah? You may take them and use them. This taking them and using them. What about it? And wow, what an extravagant promise. Did anybody besides me have this flash of a kind of resistance to it? Like, really? Can I believe that? Could I do it?
Could I take them?
Could I take them?
Me?
Take them? Right. Yeah, like that. Yeah. Do I take them? And what's it going to cost me? Yeah? Will it be hard? And what the heck is Dharma? So to wade into this territory, I'd like to turn to the Vimalakirti Sutra. Some of you, I think quite a number of you, have had a chance to listen to Joan Sutherland's brilliant talks about this sutra that she gave in the spring and summer of 2011. Numbers and I don't hang out together very well. 2011. That I've been editing this summer the transcriptions of those talks, and so they're with me a lot. And I'm very much hoping that they'll be released as a chapbook really soon, because I want you all to have those in your hands. But meanwhile, I'll bring you a little bit. Yeah. So as I got this far today, I'm interrupting myself as I did then to look up. And now the sky is cloud-swept and the distances are softened in the evening light. West-facing ridges and crags are lit in sharp relief. Golden cottonwood stands as a banner announcing distant mountains. Single starlings scull to the west in a hurry. The light will weaken soon, and it will be time to go. You may take them and use them. I think this is about creativity. So you might just kind of hold that question and see if you see that weaving through some way. So the Vimalakirti Sutra, the sutra that Vimalakirti spoke. Mahayana Sutra, 2,000 years old. Another title for it is The Reconciliation of Dualities. The Reconciliation of Dualities. And so our sutra begins in a northern Indian garden where the Buddha has given a talk to thousands of beings of all sorts. And for some of you, I'm recapping this bit, but don't worry, we're going beyond. Shariputra, the same one that we've talked about this morning in the sutra service, Shariputra says, you know, during the question and answer period, I have a question. You keep saying, this is the pure land. Well, you know, my experience has a lot of ick in it. There's an endless war in Syria that won't quit, and that's on top of all the other endless wars that we've already been mired in. And we have diseases that crop up and wipe out numbers of people in horrible ways. And you got to hear about my daughter's boyfriend. Holy moly. Etc. And so the Buddha doesn't say anything. He just gets down off of his dais and digs his toes into the ground. And suddenly Shariputra sees it, the pure land. And the Buddha says, you know, this was always the pure land. I didn't just change it. What changed is your perception. So The sutra then takes up these two fundamental questions. How can this be the pure land? And what is that? What happened to Shariputra in that moment? What is that shift? What is the way, in other words? Yeah? It seems to me to be always true with these sutras, and it's something I love about them, that the Buddha gives his actual teaching in the first 5 minutes before he opens his mouth. Yeah? So this is the whole sutra. You just heard really the whole sutra, and the rest of it spins it out. Yeah? But the essential teaching was what he did right there. And it's important somehow that he did it without speaking a word. Yeah. Because there's not so much a word for that. But fortunately for us talking types, the sutra goes on from there. And we get lots of story that follows. Because we storytelling people like that stuff. So Shariputra, so what happens next is the Buddha says, our friend Vimalakirti, this enlightened lay person, a bodhisattva, who's known in all these contradictory ways as a wealthy lay person who lives very simply, as someone who likes to go to the bars and does not drink, as a great wisdom figure who didn't become a monk. He's sick. This bodhisattva, this enlightened person, is sick, and I would like one of you to go visit him for me. And they all one by one say, no, I don't think so. He is really strange. Totally gives me the willies when I'm around that guy. And I would really rather not, sorry. And so this goes on for quite a while. And then finally Manjushri says, okay, guess I'm going. And at which point everybody in the gathering goes, oh my gosh, Manjushri and Vimalakirti. This is a conversation I want to hear. Yeah? I would rather not partake. I won't participate, but I sure want to hear it. So 32,000 of them go traipsing off to Vimalakirti's house. And Vimalakirti, meanwhile, knows they're coming somehow and has emptied out the place, sent everybody away, taken out all the furniture. And they arrive at Vimalakirti's 10-by-10-foot room, in which there is nothing but Vimalakirti sick on a couch. Okay? So they arrive, and he welcomes everybody, and they all troop into the room, with 32,000 of them. And Shariputra says, excuse me, sir, where are all these people going to sit? There are no chairs in here. And so Vimalakirti says, did you come for a seat or for the Dharma? What did you come for? What are you looking for? In other terms that many of you have heard, we could say what that question is. What is your heart's deepest request? Yeah? What did you really come for? How about us here? What did we really come? What do we come for? Yeah? So this is where suddenly there's a, something engages here, something engages the heart. Yeah? What did you come for? And Vimalakirti goes on to say, one by one, to start to list the things we come for. Yeah? Looking for happiness? Looking for wisdom? Looking for peace? Want to be a little more compassionate? You know, hoping to be a little more useful in the world? A little bit less suffering might be nice. And actually, no, I just come for the, I just want to really engage with the central teachings, you know? I really want to engage with the Four Noble Truths. I want to engage with suffering, end, so cause of suffering, end of suffering, path. That's what I come for. And Vimalakirti, one by one, says, well, then you're not looking for the Dharma. You've got some other idea going on. You are already otherwise occupied. So, come back to our koan for just a second. Think about this in the light of, you may take them and use them. Yeah? But what if your hands are full? What if your hands are full? So goes through that whole list and finally says, you know, if you are seeking the Dharma, you have to come empty-handed. You have to come stripped of every idea you have about what is the Dharma, with every idea you have about what is going to fulfill you, what is going to make your life complete, what is going to solve your problems, what is going to make you better. Not so easy when you've invested quite a bit in learning stuff, huh? Not so easy to say, oh, well, none of the above. I can let this go. But he says you have to stand on the bare ground and wait. And then Joan says in her wonderful way, then, as you stand on the bare ground and wait, what walks towards you? That's the Dharma.
Would you say that again? That's what?
That's the Dharma. As you stand there, naked, with nothing. What walks towards you? That's the Dharma. It won't have a name, will it? If it has a name already, you've turned it into something else. Yeah. So, this is a movement, a deeply subversive move, isn't it? It's like, first, give up everything. And then, that's when you can take it. Yeah? You may take it. In your empty hand. In your empty heart. In your empty consciousness. You may take it. It's offered. It's unfolding now. It is arriving. It is here all the time. You're already bathing in it. You're made of it. You can take it.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
If you name it, does it go away?
What's your experience?
That's a question that's coming up in some of my reading, and I don't... It seems like the answer is yes, don't name it, just let it be there.
But you're wondering if that's somebody else's answer or your own experience. I think it would be really valuable to hold that question and experiment. See what happens if in the moment before you name it, you don't run away and you don't close anything off. If you stay just that little bit longer, what is it like then? You can see what you notice. I think I don't want to fall into the place of saying not naming is bad, naming is good. Because that's not my experience. Mm-hmm. So it's really more a question of what is it like in that moment when there is no name? Okay? Mm-hmm. What becomes possible there? Mm-hmm. So then there's this lovely little point, which is Vimalakirti calls upon another Buddha and 32,000 lion thrones appear. So everybody has a seat in the 10-by-10-foot room.
A lion throne.
And then, how are we doing? Are you good? Are you holding out for a little more? Mm-hmm. So then the discussion happens because there's this a really strange thing that's hard to work out is how is this bodhisattva, what's the deal with him being sick? Yeah? So so people are asking him about it, you know, what gives? And as he talks about his illness, which I'm not going to spell out right here because I want to stay a little bit focused where we are. In Joan's words, whatever is tilty is what Vimalakirti is talking about. And saying that quality of tiltiness is fundamental to this world. So when he says, I am sick because the whole world is sick, he is saying, this thing that seems so odd to you, this fundamental oddness of how can I be sick, this is the oddness of the world. This is the profound oddness of how it is. And this is this tilty, pure land. This very odd, pure land is the one we've got. So these treasures, too, we can rely upon. Sickness and old age and death. The raw, the very beyond us nature of being. Of birth, of life, of death. And the invitation then is to accept the offer the world makes. Can you feel that offer in the words, you may take them? Yeah? You may take them. It's an offer, it's an invitation. The offer is to take them all, yeah? Just as they are. To be an unbalanced being in an unbalanced world, in Joan's words. So nice for the train to wail for us a little bit. Because there is a deep sadness that comes with that too, isn't there? Yeah. To be an unbalanced being in an unbalanced world. Whoa. And this creativity is what I believe we're made of. So this is the other part of you may take them and use them. We have hands, we humans. We humans, among all beings, we've got a few cousins, but we have these really smart hands. And we have the capability to make things that we then pass on to whole millions of people. And in fact, to also share with the other beings. And in fact, everything that we do, we share with the other beings. And this is not all bad. We are made out of this fundamental, enormous creativity. That's not separate from the creativity. It's the creativity of the cosmos in us, yeah? It's our expression of the creativity that is fundamental to everything. We may take them and use them. I found a couple of lovely quotes from one from Elizabeth Gilbert, who just says, well, creative people is a redundant statement. And she says, you know, art, if you look at the archaeological records, the way, way old records, art appears before cooking. And her take on this is, it was more important to us as a species to make pretty things than it was to get good at feeding ourselves. And I think that's true. That rings true to me. Yeah? It was more important to us, more important, not just more interesting, more important to us as a species to make pretty things than to get good at cooking food. Even though cooking food, you realize, was a revolution in human development, because it meant we didn't have to be picking leaves all the time. It actually liberated humans to do other things. Cooking was a huge deal as a discovery. But making pretty things came first. And she also made this lovely statement, creativity is going into the uncertain. And that journey is accompanied by fear. You just take it along with you. Should I read that part again? Mm-hmm. Creativity is going into the uncertain. So you hear that echo of stand on the bare ground, right? And see what comes to meet you. Yeah? Going to meet it. Going into the uncertain, unburdened by what you know, is that by definition, right? Creativity is going unburdened by what you know and think you want. And into the uncertain, and that journey is accompanied by fear. You just take it along with you. So what is that like for you? What is it like when what is it like if all that is really needed is that? Can we believe that? To me, that's in those words, you may take it. You may take it. use it. A very short poem to end with. Actually, there were two, but I only see one of them. You're in luck. If cloud is sash and rain a robe, under a clear sky, you'll all be naked. There was one about a peony, though. I wanted to read you. Let's see if it'll show up. Anybody want to bring anything in? We have a few minutes.
After my Dharma talk yesterday, last time, not saying I completely got it, but I think it is scary. It can be scary when you're alone by yourself, naked, and afraid, and in the cold, damp earth by yourself, and what comes up to you is yourself. Usually when in that creative moment.
I need you to talk louder.
It is yourself that comes up to yourself sometimes. Mm-hmm. That can be scary. Painting, mm-hmm. especially.
Mm-hmm. When you're undefended.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And what seemed interesting was the, after that, I said, go ahead and take it, and it seemed very personal, like, take yourself, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. like, grab yourself, you mm-hmm. already have all this.
Mm-hmm. Mm. If what appears is yourself, take it, mm. yeah.
Living beings is redundant because we are created by nature, you know. And I like how in the first half it says it will reveal itself, right?
It opens of itself.
It opens of itself. You may take it. So even if you don't, you're free to not take whatever. It's still going to keep going.
Yeah.
It's still what?
Still going to keep going. And so I think, you know, it's like when you get all of your art supplies or you get all of your tools or whatever it is you're about to manifest, and you can take all of those, But when you don't use certain things, it adds to your style. And there's
adds to
your style. And so there's, when you talk about fear, I'm not finding fear in that, because it's more freedom, because even though I can take and I don't have to take, I really can't screw up.
Yeah.
You know, so what fear is there? And there's no hindrance. You know,
yes.
Like in the sutra, so then it's like, you know, just wall out.
Right. So I love that. You're questioning her thing about creativity is accompanied by fear.
Yeah.
And you're saying, well, maybe sometimes.
Maybe
sometimes. And other times, maybe not.
Yeah.
Just freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that I'm using... And that's sort of also going into the next part about however you wish, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But you say you may take them and use them, and when you take them and use them, you're saying there's a part of your creativity is not taking some, is selecting what you're taking, and knowing that it's still unfolding everywhere. Whatever you take is not like disappearing. It's continuing to unfold. It's always opening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But in that, but then your part in meeting it is you selecting what you're taking.
Mm-hmm.
That's lovely. It's part of, so there's the your piece of this unfolding, selecting and making the next unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Say that again.
That When you take it and use it, you are part, that's your part of the unfolding, isn't it? That's also the storehouse opening of itself. Your taking it is another, is what's happening. So that's also the unfolding. It's the bit that's yours. Because if we think that storehouse of treasures is something separate from us, and I think you were kind of getting that too, that, you know, when you're there on the bare ground, what you meet is, oh, hello, you know, that's interesting, it's me, you know, not what I was looking for necessarily. Yeah. Yeah. What else? Thank you.
So are you taking it and doing it, or is it taking you and doing you?
Yes. Yeah. So it sort of reminded me of the image of making love, and you know, who's making love to whom, you know?
Get me all bashful over here.
Anything else?
So, on the other side of the you may, there's the thoughts of why don't we? And I kind of came up with the idea that we don't take of it because, you know, it's there already. And that perhaps we don't even see it because of the fear and the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even though it's there for us to take, you know, we have to clear that out sometimes before we can even see that it's, before we can come to this understanding that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that's just kind of what I got from it, that as we come here into, you know, this birth, it's already, you know, it's already here. And, you know, through these fears and suffering, we just close the door against it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, through finding the way of, you know, releasing the suffering, then we open ourselves, you know, it opens to us.
Maybe. And I'm thinking about do we ever not? Are we ever really not receiving this gift?
Well, if it's always there, then we're always receiving it. We just may not see it.
We may not know that we are. But that you may take it does imply you may not take it. But just as you were talking, I was thinking, if I trust in the wisdom of being, the fundamental wisdom of being, then even if I may look at what I'm doing and think it's stupid, or think I've screwed up in some way, and maybe it was because of my past history, or you know, I'm failing this in some way, then I'm not trusting the fundamental wisdom of being. Maybe what I'm doing is already okay. Maybe I'm already taking it and using it. But there may be, you know, as Jacob was saying, I'm taking and using this part this time. What I create with that is going to be part of this creation. I don't know, that just came up as you were speaking.
Maybe you're taking and using without naming. There's no talking about what specifics, it's just you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Each time we put a foot down, we're putting it down someplace and not someplace else.
Putting the toes in the dirt.
Yeah. So this is maybe a good place to wind it up. Thank you all.